Dumelang Thobela, hello and welcome to your week's news wrap-up brought to you by the SL Cabinet. I am your host, Gwena Mashale, and I am joined today by my colleague Herman Molloy.
Hi.
Unfortunately, guys, Nandi won't be joining us today. So, yeah, new week, same mission. Let's dive right in. So, obviously, the first thing that's getting everybody buzzing is the fact that the budget speech actually took place. So, the Finance Minister, Enoch Godogwana, says to cushion citizens from the rising cost of living, social grants will be increased above inflation, right? So, he announced on Wednesday that the VAT rate would increase by 16% by 2026. And 2027. Let's take a listen to some of that speech.
To raise the revenue needed, the government proposes to increase the VAT rate by half a percentage point in 2025-26 and by another half a percentage point in the following year.
Let's hear the reactions from some political parties leaders to the VAT increase. They were addressing the media following the speech.
We reject the idea of a VAT hike. I think South Africans are going to be double taxed. It's on VAT, but also on personal tax. You are asking teachers, lawyers, nurses, all citizens to now be paying more tax. What ultimately we need is a growth plan.
In our considered view as the MK party, the minister had a number of options to explore, but the option that the minister chose, in our view, is a wrong one. Increasing VAT by any percentage is disastrous. To increase it by 0.5% this year and next year as well, the people who are going to suffer most are black people. These are the people who pay VAT, and we are going to suffer most.
We're not in a position to support the budget in its current form. We don't believe this budget speaks to the growth agenda in South Africa, and it doesn't make some of the bold decisions that we need to be able to move the country forward.
Enoch tabled the budget in Parliament. He increased the child support grant by at least 50 rand. He increased old age grant by 130, and then he also increased the disability and war veterans grant by also 130 as well. So there was also, we spoke to a couple of, well, not me specifically, but Herman and Nandi spoke to a couple of grant recipients on the ground, and they showed appreciation for the increase, while mothers are saying it is not enough. I will chime in my two cents later, but Herman, do you have anything to add?
So, firstly, the budget was passed after it was postponed, which means we are getting somewhere. The GNU seems that it has not collapsed yet. It will be interesting to see, because the DA said that they're going to oppose the budget, the passing of the budget in Parliament. And we know MK also said they are against the budget. But now what's funny is that they vowed to their voters that we will never, ever, ever vote with DA no matter what. And now the situation presents itself. It's going to be an interesting week. That week, or I'm not sure when it's going to happen. But yeah, it's going to be interesting. And then also it shows the, I think it's arrogance of the ANC to increase VAT. Because, I mean, everyone was crying. We knew that it was going to 17%. And he's like, okay, halibatli 10 rand, I'm going to give you 5 rand. And we are telling him it's enough. Yeah, it builds a lot of pressure on us.
Yeah.
So it shows that this guy are arrogant and they do as they please. But also, it will be interesting if this budget will pass or they will have to go back to the drawing board.
Yeah.
And then when it comes to pensioners, Bumagogo, we know Bumagogo, they complain, but they don't want to say we are complaining because they love ANC.
Yeah.
And then Abumama, it's very sad that they are being insulted over social media for saying it's not enough. And it's not enough, really. It's not like they are saying you should give us this much. They say, just saying it's not enough in terms of our needs and wants, mostly needs of the children. So yeah, it's a very interesting development that happened this week, whereby we had like a house burning on fire. And yeah, that's my two cents. But yeah,
I'm going to kind of I'm gonna kind of agree with the people on social media, Herman. I tend to be insensitive, but I want to look at it from all sides' points, right?
Yeah.
Someone who's getting taxed, someone who has a job who's getting taxed, yeah, it's not gonna be the same as someone who doesn't have a job and is getting grant and is getting taxed.
Yeah.
It's a thing of literally 7.8 million people who have jobs are being taxed to supply money to 20 million people, you understand? So I think it's quite fair for people to go on social media and express, hore, we are now being suffering the burden and brunt for and it's not a crude thing to say that for you to now come and say it's not enough, but it's literally coming out of our pockets. Mm. It's not even coming out of the government's pocket. It's coming out of our pockets, and it's also going to be brunting us because we also have families. We also have kids that we want to feed. So for you to say that it's not enough when we're actually even trying to give you the bare minimum that we have, it's also kind of like, you know that thing out of your seers, you are spitting in the gifts mouse. It's literally like that. I think the problem with South Africans is that I think we've had this discussion a lot. We are so used to getting the grant that when it's like now... not even to the standard that you want. You want to start complaining, but it's like, dude, the grant was there just as a relief. It's a COVID relief thing. Mm. At some point, the government even wanted to scrap it. They wanted to like, no, but there's no longer need for this COVID relief thing. So now my thing is that I'm seeing it both ways because there are people who are complaining. Because imagine someone who's earning 30K. You know, imagine someone
yourself. I'm
just saying, imagine someone who is, because I was also watching the social media feeds, and people are kind of like angry that they now have to kind of support other people's families while they are struggling to support their families themselves. So it's a two-way street, and I get it, shame. They also need to support their kids. But at the same time, just because wena and it doesn't mean now I must now feel your pain. I also need to feed my kids. So both sides, you know, you need to look at both sides of the coin. So yeah, but other than that, guys, we'll see how they implement it, because I think there was also a confusion in terms of the decimal point. Apparently there was a problem with accountants and how are they going to attribute to implementing the different decimal into the cost and everything. But hey guys, we will see what happens as we go, man. Moving on, guys, to the next topic. There's been, this week, hey, it's been a sad week, especially for families around Gauteng. So there's been multiple crashes in Ekurhuleni, literally since the beginning of the week. I think Monday, right?
Yeah.
Monday, I think Tuesday, another crash happened. Wednesday, another crash happened, and yesterday, thankfully, there was no crash. Or was there? I think there was, but no one was injured. If I read the statements right. So basically, more than 20 people died while they were on their way either to school or to work. And majority of the crashes were either involved Ekurhuleni vehicles. I'm going to put it like this, Ekurhuleni municipal vehicles, right? In one incident, I think it was on the Monday, the spokesperson from EMPD, well, EEMPD, Ekurhuleni Emergency Metro Services, Management Services, William Gladi, basically voiced out how they took most of the victims from the crash to the hospital, the nearest hospital at the time. Let's take a listen to that.
Currently, I'm on the R21 northbound, adjacent to OR Tambo International Airport. A bus has jackknifed, rolled several times, and unfortunately in that accident, we have accounted this far 12 fatalities, all of them adults, then 9 are males and 3 are females. The entire freeway is still closed. Number of other patients that are injured have been transported to various hospitals. The scene is still ongoing, and further information will follow later.
And then on Tuesday, another incident happened where a municipal bus was carrying at least 8 to 9 passengers overturned on the R21 northbound. And it's honestly, guys, it was very, very sad. The crash was triggered when a light motor vehicle apparently braked suddenly to avoid missing an off-ramp, causing the bus driver to swerve and lose control. 16 people lost their lives in that incident alone. And then there was another, I think there was another one, him and that you covered with kids.
It was the Monday one
where he covered it with kids, and it was tragic. And even I was like, because there was a debate of who's going out. He went out on Tuesday, on Monday. Then Tuesday happened, and I'm like, I'm not going out, guys. I'm not, I don't want to see bodies of people outside of vehicles. It would trigger me. So Nandi went out, and I think on Wednesday another incident went out, and now our editors were like, we're not doing this anymore. We're gonna end it there, because it's too much, guys. Imagine you're constantly, it's a thing where now it's even stuck in your head. You're gonna be afraid to even get in a car. You understand? I know Jeanette was even telling me that her partner, they were traveling to work, and at some point there was a taxi guy who was on his phone, and instead of, obviously we all know how Mageza they drive, so he kind of like pushed their car onto the side, and they then pushed someone else onto oncoming traffic. And it was that thing where her partner was so angry that he wanted to come out, and she was like, "Gwen, I've never seen him that angry." And it's like, it must have been a trigger from all what was happening the whole week, because that's all we were seeing: crashes. Herman, what's your point?
Yeah. So it was an unfortunate week. On Monday, the four kids, I mean, those were young children. They were going to school. There were 8 in the vehicle. 4 died. 4 were rushed to nearby hospitals. We arrived at the scene. Well, it was almost clean, wiped up. But the mortuary vehicle was still there, and some families had arrived at some point. And you know, one thing that always pains me is seeing a mother cry. You know. So it's taking a toll. I still have a clear picture of what happened that day. The most disturbing views or image that I have in my mind, it's seeing a mother cry because she has lost her son or her daughter. And also this grandpa, Mr. Zulu, who came and he was told that 2 of your grandkids have passed on. You could see how defeated he was. He was unable to speak also. I read Times Life article yesterday. They say one of the uncle of the learners who died on Monday has also passed away as a result of the incident. It's a tragic And the Tuesday one, 16 people, I mean, that's a lot of number. This thing seems like, you remember last year we were dealing with spaza shops and everything, and it was happening at this pace. And now it's seeing cars crashing. And also, we don't know, it's either the state of road infrastructure in South Africa, or is it reckless driving, or, you know. It's very painful. It's been a painful week. Also, it has taken something from me, because at some point when I get into a car, I imagine what could happen.
And I think when you look at the country as it is, guys, I think there've actually been a lot of crashes if we look at from the beginning of the year till now. And it's like, what exactly is going on? Is it Bella? Is it road infrastructure? Or are people just getting really reckless on the road? And then now that now just also makes me wonder, then where's the TMPD, the EMPDs? Where are they on the road as well? Visuals, it's like people are forgetting the whole arrive alive slogan, and it's just becoming more like worse, guys. So guys, can we just be safe on the roads as we go on? Because, it's not a good picture. Not even a good picture. It's not nice to see kids dying because you were not driving properly. And half of the time, the drivers always make it out safe, which is what kind of annoys me mostly. But let's move on, guys. So the Electoral Commission of South Africa recently hosted a three-day conference in Cape Town to explore the possibility of electronic voting in the country. I spoke to Deputy CEO Mawethu Muzeri on Monday about whether or not this system could work and if they have any concerns around cyber threats. Let's listen to that audio right now.
Well, the commission has been having discussions on electronic voting more as a tool to assist the efficiency of voting, but secondly, as a means to just be able to reach every corner of the country and introduce an element of people participating as well as the cost implications in terms of the number of personnel that would be at voting stations doing the count, the voting process. So it's looking at efficiencies as well as the impact on the correctness of what we do and the trustworthiness from the part of political contestants.
So basically after that discussion, right, I was kind of in the mix because it was a matter of we're still developing. It's still a thought. It's not yet an actual thing, but it's in the talks of actually it can happen. But my question is, guys, South Africa is so, I think my biggest worry was that South Africa is so prone to cyber threats, to cyber attacks. Is like, and I asked him, is there no concern for the cyber threats so that you guys can, there can be some sort of manipulation of things? And he says, I mean, yes, those type of things happen, but there is some control that we're going to have on it. There's going, not everything's going to be on the system. But now it's like, is it not going to be, it's not going to make it easier for manipulation? Because at the end of the day, guys, even last week, was it not even last year, even last year during the electoral things, there was a whole thing of, no, there were boxes that were not counted. There was boxes that were missing. There were alleged boxes. There were things.
But let's not entertain that one because we know which party raised that and we know. Let's just talk about the Electoral Commission of South Africa. Yes, they have their flaws, but those card boxes that were not counted, we are not sure. But yeah. I just want us to have clarity on that one. And then I don't know if you were done, you were going to ask me my thought about this, or you wanted to continue.
I was going to ask you your thought about this. Okay.
So for me, it's a great idea. I mean, look at it, voting while you are watching news and you're seeing that some family in KZN is experiencing floods, and you see ANC, you say, you know what, this one's, I'm not gonna vote for them because you can see it happening, the results of your vote in the previous election. It's a great concept, I won't lie, but then we know South Africa, we are not the best when it comes to the technology. We are still getting there. And yeah, you said you were prone to cyber threats. I mean, they hack the South African weather service. So what's gonna happen? I mean, if you are hacking weather service, what are you aiming for? So yeah, I'm too sad. I don't know, but yeah, it's a great concept. I won't lie. Also, it means that you will be able to go to work the same day. But for us who always rush for stories,
it's still the same thing.
It's gonna be hectic because, I mean, you won't knock someone at someone's house and say, did you vote? Why did you vote, your bro?
No, so, man. Yeah. I think for me, I think my biggest concern is like the rural areas, you know? Because, guys, the rural areas are still behind in certain things. So now imagine now we're bringing in a whole new system. How are they going to implement it? And I think the biggest thing he said that you see that would require a lot of talking on the ground with the citizens, a lot of talking with the political parties themselves, and exactly how they can go forward in implementing it. But I think, like you're saying, it's a very interesting concept to think about and to look at. It would make, I think, voting easier. But at the same time, I think it would make us also lazy. Why can't we just go, like, just keep it the normal way, you know, the traditional way?
But let's be honest, we as young people, are always on our phone. And everything, you know, even now, like when you are hungry, you're like, okay, where's McD? Or you order. We want everything to be on our smartphone.
Wow.
So it will be a great concept. Like I'm voting from home.
Wow.
I'm not bothering anyone by having to stay in the long queue. You know, I hate queues.
Eh? Okay, Herman, we get it. You hate queues. Let's move on, guys. So, guys, there was a shocking thing that happened, I think, in Limpopo this on, was it Monday? Was it?
It's Saturday.
Yeah, this past Saturday. So Limpopo police are investigating a brutal and attempted murder at Philadelphia Hospital's psychiatric ward in Sekhukhune, right? Mm-hmm. So the incident, the police actually, when the way they describe it, guys, is very, how can I put it? Herman said it was very dramatic, and it went into great detail compared to when the minister spoke about it. So basically, in its essence, let's just give it a small wrap up. The police officers were on patrol at the time. Yes. They then heard this commotion and they swiftly responded to a report of an assault at the hospital, right? Yes. When they arrived, they discovered such a gruesome scene.
The fact that they even said gruesome for me. Yeah.
they found a gruesome scene. A male suspect was found on top of a lifeless male body, covered in blood and allegedly biting the deceased genitals. I just wanted to put a disclaimer in there. I feel like I should have done it before, but I'm doing it now. before we proceed. So the deceased, who was 33, sustained a gunshot wound to the head, along with multiple injuries, including missing teeth, right? The suspect himself suffered gunshot wounds on both legs, allegedly inflicted by a security officer who was attempting to defuse the situation, right? So essentially, at the end of the day, guys, when they now speak about it more, it seemed as if one of the suspect was on drugs.
Yeah, is a drug addict.
Yes, he's a drug addict and is also a patient at the hospital. Am I correct, or are they still to confirm?
He was recently booked.
He was recently booked while the deceased is actually has been a long time patient at the hospital, at the mental hospital. And when Mutualedi, the Minister of Health, Mutualedi, was on scene and he was talking about it, he described it as a very barbaric thing. Let's hear what he has to say on that.
For my whole 42 years in this profession, I've never heard or seen something like this. This is bizarre, it's bizarre. And the explanations are very woolly and still as clear as mud. But in short, there are four psychiatric patients in a ward. Two of them are not really psychiatric patients in the true sense of the word. It's substance-induced psychosis. They took crystal meth. And those of us in this profession who know, people who take crystal meth, they really go seriously psychotic. In our language, they are mad, as mad. And they are known to be extremely violent. So this man was admitted on the 5th. And we understand early hours of this morning, he woke up to attack the other three patients. The other two were able to run away and escape. And the deceased is the one who remained in the ward. The most bizarre part is the behavior of the security officers who were called here, because there are security officers in this hospital. They came in, but I understand they actually ran out of the ward. They are armed. This man was not armed. He was just hitting the deceased with everything at his disposal.
Herman, what do you think of the minister's words?
Wait, the ministers were there. Not say anything. I mean, the person who wrote the police statement gave you a picture of what was happening at that point. I mean, he or she, the person who wrote, we're speaking about the author of the statement, she or he is saying that when they arrived at the scene or at the hospital, they found this guy eating genitals of this guy who's dead, Robo, and he's busy chowing or biting.
Mm.
And also the deceased has no teeth. So you get to think, oh, what happened to the teeth? And you also think of the security guard who was shot. Mm. I mean, first of all, where does the gun come from?
Yeah.
So this scene, it's hilarious for me. And it's like you're watching a movie, AI movie. You're saying, can you give me something dramatic? it doesn't show that it actually happened.
Wow.
Yeah, my thing, it's hard to believe.
Mm. So now in a case like this, how do you treat them both? They're both mental patients.
Yes.
Umu Tswaledi says, he describes the situation as, what did he say? He said crazy. What did he say? In our language,
it's a mad business.
Sorry for our laughter, guys, but yeah. Mutaledi, like the way he explained it, it was just very also dramatic, I must put it. Yeah. It was a very dramatic his way that he explained it. Because he says he also in his 20 years of being a doctor, he has never seen such a case before. And I think it also just goes to show you what drugs can really do to someone's mental capacity, guys. Because at the end of the day, it is a mental health problem. People who do get addicted to drugs, there is definitely something wrong, and they do get admitted to hospitals. So you can't now say, no, they must be put in the normal prisons. It's not the same thing. They won't get help in the normal prisons. So they need to go to the psychiatric hospitals. But now it's a thing of, how do you separate them? I think we're having this conversation on Monday, wasn't it?
But they are not crazy per se.
But they still need high. You know, drugs can actually have a problem or have a lasting impact on mental capacity, even if you leave them.
Yeah. But let's talk about people who have seizure and people who have been on drugs.
Yeah.
Those are two different people. Mm-hmm. The other one forgets because of his mental capability or capacity.
Mm.
And then this one, it's just that you smoke something that is disturbing you at the current time.
Mm.
Yes, there are people who end up losing their ability to think or their IQ because of drugs.
Mm.
But again, they are not crazy. They should be taken to rehabs, not psychiatric hospital. For me, it looks like that. I mean,
but it must have been a thing, you know. I don't know, guys. I think this is one of those case in point discussions where there will have to be a turnaround in the way the department will have to see how they actually treat the different patients. But then I feel like they put them all in the same boat. It's just that they need to be watched very carefully.
I mean, it goes back to how the community treats people.
Yeah.
Like there's a guy, you know, who's mentally disturbed, who walks around the street and sharp feeling. You know that he is mentally disturbed. And once you start smoking and then you do things when you're high, but what have? You're not happy, you are high. And you should be disciplined in a certain way.
We'll leave that. We'll leave that to Mutaledi to deal with, and hopefully he comes up with a plan to kind of mitigate what they do going forward. So, guys, just a quick takes before closing. A convicted murderer who escaped Maputo's maximum security prison during the Mozambique unrest in December has been arrested in Sandton, South Africa for alleged involvement in multiple car thefts. Right. So, the national spokesperson, Brigadier Athlenda Mate, confirmed that the fugitive was linked to several vehicle thefts in Gauteng and was apprehended during a recent operation. He was part of, I think, 1,500 people who escaped during that unrest, guys. And honestly, the police, I think, are still putting in efforts to look for the other remaining people who escaped, while obviously the police in South Africa are working with the cross-border law enforcement to make sure that everything is set out straight. Hemen, do you want to add a two cent there?
The fact that this guy is a murderer,
mm-hmm.
he was in a maximum prison,
mm-hmm.
takes it off. But what's crazy,
mm-hmm.
it's that this guy came to South Africa, managed to escape, God knows how.
Mm.
This guy does not say, okay, let me lie low, let me live crime, let me try to be a better person. This guy goes to dealerships, car dealerships, and says, you know what, I'm here to rent a car, a party. And then he rents a car and then he moves into Mozambique where he escaped, meaning he has a link that side.
Yeah.
So it shows how, it's one of the mad business for me, like Mtswaledi said on the previous story. Yeah, it shows how, firstly, the prison system in that side.
Yeah.
It's okay, it's during an unrest when it happened, but also a maximum prison. A maximum prison, you're expecting to have more security. And also the fact that this guy is able to say, okay, I've stolen this, I'm going to...
Going back to where I stole it from.
So yeah, for me, it's an interesting story. And we know half or all of them might be in South Africa. From that's that true. 1.5.
Okay. Might be. We don't know. Okay. Right. Moving to the next quick take, guys. City Power basically says that they are making significant progress in combating cable theft, right? So they said that incidents have decreased by 36% from July 2024 to February 2025, with the entity having arrested at least 279 suspects, of which at least 10 are their own employees. So... and majority of the time, the City Power says that, you know what, ne, this thing is even taking us out of our budget because we are not the police. In fact, we are just here to supply electricity. But now we have to now countermeasure for this whole thing of people stealing. And we have to, when we send people down there, these people are now having to now decide whether they want to live or they want to die just to protect cables. Hammond, any thoughts?
That's it. So. Cable theft is a very serious concept. I mean, in January, we did a story whereby they were now stealing the one underground.
Yeah.
They were no longer going up, for...
up above.
And it's funny because once in a while, you see videos of people who were disciplined by electricity. they are disciplined.
Yeah.
And then you see the other people, I mean, 279, that's a lot.
That's a lot.
And it's in Joburg only. Think about Tshwane, you think about Ekurhuleni.
Yeah.
One thing, I know we've passed that topic. You know, I still don't know the mayor of Ekurhuleni, despite the crashes. But yeah. I still don't know him. I hear that he had a media briefing. I don't know what happened to the media briefing. He's in your guy.
It's a real problem, guys, in this country. Problem. Shame, even because it's concerned the fact that even the executive operator said that these people even go as far as going into the sewage tunnels
underground
guys, to go smelling like poo just to steal the cable. I know, guys. But you know what? For each, what again, what kind of somebody, kind of Nandi was saying, what? Push a panda. Nandi was like, Nandi was saying, push a panda. But let's go, guys. So that's all for the week's news wrap, guys. Remember that you can find our latest podcast, review, and subscribe for free on Oyono FM. Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you choose to get your podcast. You can also find us or follow us on all social media platforms at Sowetan Live. This podcast is a Times Live production and our producer is Demi Buzo. Don't forget, you can also have a listen to our other podcasts, Sunday Times Politics Weekly, Taking the Rams by the Horns, Business Day Spotlight, The Indigenous Corner with Gogo Zipo, and Deeply Rooted. Thank you for tuning in. Join us again next week for more updates on the biggest stories. From me, Gwena, and my colleague Herman. Bye. Bye.